It is Halloween month. It is my favorite time of year. It's the best time of year. Not just my favorite time of year. This is the best time of year. This is your NXT TakeOver 31 review right here on the Solid Monster Sounds of YouTube channel for Sunday, October 4th, 2020. I am the Solid Monster. You know, these TakeOver shows always deliver. You have TakeOver shows that are very good. You have TakeOver shows that are just blow away excellent. So it can depend. Some takeovers are better than others. I really don't know that I've ever seen what I would call a bad takeover show. And tonight's show would certainly not be in that category. Tonight's show had a little bit of everything. It had great wrestling. They advanced some stories, right? They had stories that they've been building to, even though I felt like this show, they could have put this off for a little while longer. We had some familiar faces making their return. We have a women's division now that has been refreshed, which it's going to need because they've lost some women, and I have a feeling they may lose a few more in the draft coming up this week. And we had a new setting. This was the debut of NXT inside the Performance Center. It is the Performance Center no more. The WWE Performance Center has now been rechristened. It is now the Capital Wrestling Center. Very surprised they actually have the word wrestling in there. Clearly, this was not a Vince McMahon decision. But they are now calling it the Capital Wrestling Center, which had a combination of a lot of Thunderdome-esque elements to it. They had the LED boards with all the virtual fans. But they allowed actual fans into the building as well. It was a mix of some of the wrestlers and trainees, family and friends. So it was a different environment. I thought it looked pretty damn cool, honestly. I thought it really worked in this environment. A very intimate environment. It's not as big as the Amway Center is, but I thought on every level, this show tonight was absolutely positively nothing but a thumbs-up effort from NXT. And NXT of late, there have been weeks where NXT, frankly, is just very dull. There's nothing necessarily bad about the show. There's nothing necessarily wrong about the show. It's just sort of there. There's not a lot of excitement. Not having that Full Sail crowd there does hurt them a lot. Tonight felt like something of a refresh in a way. I think being in that new environment is going to help them out a lot, you know, being out of Full Sail, at least for the time being. So I thought this was an excellent show tonight. I thought this was probably the best of NXT since all this pandemic nonsense started all these months ago when they had their crowd stripped away from them. And, you know, when the crowd was taken away, the heart and soul of NXT was taken away. These takeover shows are not the same without that, you know, giant crowd going nuts for everything these guys do. Tonight was as close to that as we have felt since the beginning of the year. And I thought from top to bottom, it was a great effort overall. By the way, we are only a little over 100 subscribers away from hitting 60,000 subs here on this channel. My goal is to hit 60K before we hit the anniversary next month. We do have the big 13-year anniversary coming up in November. Speaking of the 13-year anniversary, I got to tell you guys about this. I told you about this on the podcast earlier today. I'm very excited to let you all know about the 13-year anniversary t-shirt. There it is, the 13th anniversary. You guys know I love Halloween. You guys know I love Friday the 13th. It is the perfect marriage. And I hope that you'll pick up a shirt. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. It went up today, the brand new 13-year anniversary t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees. I got it up a month early because I figured it fits the Halloween theme. Gives people plenty of time if you want to pick it up before the anniversary. It's been a while since we've had a new shirt go up. I love this thing. I've already got mine on the way. Before we get into the review here, I did mention something on the podcast earlier today. I received something from one of my listeners, one of my longtime listeners, Eddie. Shout out to Eddie Hirobi. He told me he had gotten me a little something as something of a, I guess like a birthday gift, right? My birthday's coming up on Tuesday. So he sent it to me this morning. I have not watched this video yet. I know what it is because I had to load it into OBS here, but I have not actually watched this. And I thought it would be kind of cool if we could all sort of watch it together. Here live. It's probably not that long. It's maybe about a minute long. But yes, I have not watched this yet. So I'm going to play this clip right now. This is the first time I'm watching it. You'll see my reaction next to it. But again, this is from Eddie. And this is what Eddie sent me a little bit earlier today. Let's take a look.
Hey, this is Brett the Hitman Hart, and I got a very special happy birthday shout-out going out to my longtime fan, Jason, a.k.a. Solo Monster. I want to wish you all the best. Have a great birthday. I want to thank you for being such a longtime fan of mine. Always in my corner, always cheering me on, always cheering on Mr. The SummerSlam. I want to thank you for always being in my corner. And just know for your birthday, I'm in your corner right now. I'm cheering you on. I want you to have a great birthday. This message is coming courtesy of your good buddy, Eddie. We just wanted you to have a great birthday because you're the excellence of execution at everything you do. And you are, without a doubt, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Have a great birthday. And who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Ah! Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it. You got to get that in there at the end. Oh, you got to get that in there at the end. That's awesome. Oh, that's fucking awesome. Eddie, I love you. Eddie, if Eddie's watching, that was awesome. Eddie knows I'm obviously a big Bret Hart fan, so I knew it was a message from Bret, but I hadn't watched it. And I love how he got all the key points in there, you know? He got all of his catchphrases in there, and he had to get the El Dandy line right in there at the end, because he's heard me mention that on the show before. That put a smile on my face. Thank you. Thank you to Eddie. That was very cool. So, let's talk a little bit, man. That put me in a good mood, man. That put me in a good mood. So now we could talk about this show, which I very much enjoyed. You know what? I think Bret would have enjoyed the show tonight, too, especially that main event. That main event was the sort of match that I think someone like Bret Hart would have enjoyed, in part because we had a Bret Hart corner turnbuckle bump that Kyle O'Reilly took, and we had Finn Balor using a sharpshooter. And he did a better job with it than The Rock did when The Rock used to use the sharpshooter. So I think Bret... If Bret watched the show tonight, we'll see if he comments on it. I bet you Bret really loved that main event. But Triple H talked to Sports Illustrated earlier, and that was when the reveal, it was mentioned that the Performance Center has been renamed the Capital Wrestling Center. That is a nod to the early years of WWE in its infancy. When it was first born, the company was the Capital Wrestling Corporation, CWC. You'll notice the logo, I don't have it up, but the logo looks very similar to the Cruiserweight Classic logo they used a number of years ago. So that's kind of where he's given a wink and a nod to the history of the company with this. And he said, starting tonight, so this is going to be NXT's new home going forward. I think eventually they want to get back to full sail. They haven't severed their relationship with them, but this will be the home of NXT going forward. Triple H did not want to just go into the Amway Center. He wanted NXT to retain its own kind of vibe, its own kind of feel. And I like that. I like the idea that he wanted in a smaller, more intimate setting. I think it works. I think it works better that way. So this is where NXT is going to be. He wanted kind of a darker, edgier feel, he said, which it does give off that vibe a little bit. They had the plexiglass up with mesh fencing behind it. Like people were behind the Hell in a Cell. And it was like a miniature version, basically, of Thunderdome. It's like a miniature version of the Thunderdome, and with people in the building making noise, they still piped in fake noise. So they had actual people in the building, but they still, you could tell, they were piping in that fake crowd noise, but I thought it worked well. Vic Joseph was back. Vic Joseph has been missing. Tom Phillips has been filling in for him on NXT. Wade Barrett has been missing. Wade Barrett, Beth Phoenix, and Vic Joseph. All back tonight, but not in the building. Vic Joseph was there in person. I'm sure you noticed this because it was very distracting. When Vic Joseph went to ringside, because they had the announce desk at ringside, you could see on either side of Vic, you saw a female and you saw a male. The female was very much not Beth Phoenix, and the male was very much not Wade Barrett. Now, Beth Phoenix works from home anyway. Ever since the pandemic started, Beth Phoenix has not been live in the building. She has her own little studio set up at home. Wade Barrett, I don't know what's going on with Wade. He was at Full Sail, and then the last 3 weeks now, he hasn't been there in person. So he was obviously coming in from a studio somewhere, possibly his own home. But yeah, I got a lot of messages from people. Hey, what's going on here? Why are there weird people sitting at ringside that don't look like Wade Barrett and Beth Phoenix? They had stand-ins. They never zoomed in on the announce desk when they were there. They were just there to sit in. We were supposed to, like, when we would notice them in the background, we were supposed to think it was Beth Phoenix and Wade Barrett. But it was very much not Wade Barrett. And no, Casanova King, it was not Sasha Banks. I know it kind of looked like her from afar, but it was not. Actually, somebody said it was somebody from MLW. Or somebody who used to be with MLW. I don't know who. But anyway, we open with the North American Championship match. Damian Priest defending against Johnny Gargano. And this was the first leg of what they were trying to do here, where Johnny and Candice would walk out of the show tonight. The first married couple in the history of NXT to be champions at the same time. That was their goal. And unfortunately for them, didn't quite work out that way. This was Johnny Gargano's third straight takeover, challenging for the North American title. He lost to Keith Lee at Takeover In Your House. He did not win the ladder match at Takeover 30. And unfortunately for him, he didn't fare any better tonight. I would say that this is the end of the road for Johnny Gargano as far as the North American title is concerned. I think he has exhausted all of his North American title opportunities. We had Damian Priest with a razor's edge at one point. He was on the floor, and he just kind of just dumped Gargano. Very, very safe razor's edge, but he dumped him on the apron. Rolled back inside for a near fall. Went for the Reckoning. Not to be confused with the Retribution member by the same name. Which one is Reckoning? Is it Mercedes Martinez? Or no, she's Retaliation. Mia Yim. I think Mia Yim is Reckoning. Yes. So Damian Priest went for the Mia Yim. Got countered into a standing sliced bread by Gargano. We had Priest going for the South of Heaven chokeslam bomb, which he nailed Gargano with. Only got him a near fall. Priest with a running cannonball dive out over the top rope. So, my all-time favorite WrestleMania match is Undertaker against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. And the only real fuck-up of the entire match, which has become part of the legend of the match, was the errant dive where the Undertaker almost killed himself. That's what they were going for here. Not to try to kill themselves, but they were going for a similar type of dive here. And thankfully, this worked out a lot better than the WrestleMania dive did. Gargano pulled a couple of security guards, who I'm sure were wrestlers, into harm's way. Priest is a big guy. Undertaker is a big guy, so is Damian Priest. He did a cannonball dive out over the top rope. Thankfully, though, he did land on the security guys. They did cushion his fall. Nobody died. Nobody almost died. And Brandy's got that look on her face. Nobody died. Don't worry about it. Everyone's okay. So the referee is tending to the security dudes. He's asking for help. While everybody is distracted, Johnny comes up from behind Priest and he kicks him low. Field goal kick right between the two goalposts. And he sends him back into the ring, hits a super kick, only gets a near fall out of it. Gargano with the one final beat DDT attempt. Priest, though, catches him in midair. He does not go down for the DDT. And he sits him on the middle rope. He hits the Reckoning for the win. I thought this was an excellent opening match. Damian Priest racking up those wins, looking better and better every time I see him. Johnny Gargano doesn't need to win a match like this. Johnny Gargano's already been the North American champion. Johnny Gargano's already been the NXT champion. Johnny Gargano has exhausted everything that he could possibly do on NXT. He's been a babyface, he's been a heel. He's been a babyface, he's been a heel. He's held every championship. Except the women's title. I don't think Johnny Gargano is going to be challenging for the women's title. And if he does, by the way, I'm still picking Io Shirai to win. This was an excellent opener. We had Kushida against the Velveteen Dream. There really wasn't a bad match on this show. There really was not a bad match on this show. Dream came to the ring. He had gray hair. And he was wearing those plutonium gloves like Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. So he was cosplaying as Christopher Lloyd here on this show. Kushida had the Marty McFly jeans and the sneakers, so I guess we all know who he was supposed to be. Kushida did not waste any time. He didn't have a proper entrance. He came down. He went right for Velveteen Dream. It's almost as if he's been reading up about the Velveteen Dream lately. Because the way that he has been so angry and so upset at Velveteen Dream, you would think that he's been reading internet reports about this guy. He's doing to the Velveteen Dream what I think a lot of guys would like to do to the Velveteen Dream. So he was kicking this guy's ass and showing his vicious side. Dream got, he came back. He got the heat on him for a while. Kushida made a comeback, pulled Dream into the ring post, shoulder first. We've seen him do this before. Pulls him into the post a second time. Back inside, Dream catches him with a super kick. He goes for the purple Rainmaker elbow off the top rope, but he lands right into an armbar. Kushida catches him on the way down, perfectly catches him right into the armbar. Dream makes the ropes. He pokes Kushida right in the eye. Follows up with a powerbomb. He goes for the pin. Kushida, though, transitions into another armbar. So this is the second armbar now. He's biting the fingers. Dream breaks it. Hits the Dream Valley Driver. Back up to the top. Purple Rainmaker this time connects. Dream comes up lame, though, with that left arm. Kushida's been working that left arm over the entire match, so he can't go for the pin. He's wasting precious time. By the time he makes the cover, it's too late. So Dream heads back up now. He's going back up to the top rope for a third time. Nothing good ever comes from going up to the top rope too many times. Kushida, he runs the ropes. He meets him up top. And he has him in the position for the hoverboard lock. The Sakuraba lock. Flipping hoverboard lock all the way down to the mat. And he holds on to the hold. And Dream is trying to fight it. He's trying to kick off the ropes. He's trying to get out of it. He gets vertical. He hits the Dream Valley Driver. Kushida will not let go of the hold. Kushida is cinching up on the hold. He will not release it. Dream can take no more. He taps out. And Kushida gets the win. But that's not enough for Kushida. Because he read all the same internet reports and tweets that you and I read. He's like, fuck this guy. And he goes back to the Velveteen Dream. He beats him up some more. And he puts the armbar back on him. Now he's bending the fingers back. So the Velveteen Dream can't tweet and he can't DM anybody. So he's bending the fingers back, locks the armbar on for a third time. Kushida here came across as just being completely unhinged. This was a side of Kushida that we haven't seen. Kushida's been the nice guy. He comes out, he does the Back to the Future gimmick. He looks at his wrist like he's Steve Austin in the Royal Rumble. He's a nice guy. He's a great wrestler, but he's a nice guy. Well, no more nice guy. It's time to be an asshole. So we saw a side of Kushida here that we haven't seen since he came to NXT. And I said on the podcast earlier today, I said that Kushida, I predicted a Kushida win, and I said he should win. And by virtue of this win, he now sets himself up as a potential challenger for Finn Balor. And there's no reason to think that he can't maybe be next in line. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a takeover match. Maybe it's a big TV match. Maybe it's a Halloween Havoc match. But this win now sets Kushida up, if not to be the number one contender, to be in contention possibly to challenge Finn Balor in what I'm sure would be a great match for the championship. Not to win the championship, but I think it would be a hell of a match if they want to go down that road. I don't know what their plans are for Balor, but they now have set things up if they want to go down that road. As far as Velveteen Dream goes, this felt like a punishment. It felt maybe like a write-off. Maybe this is the last that we're going to see of him in NXT. Maybe Triple H is just ready to kind of pawn him off to the main roster. Here, you can have him. He's yours. He's your problem now. I'm tired of answering questions on these conference calls about Velveteen Dream. Here, you take him. You take him off my hands. I've done all I can do with this guy. He doesn't listen. He doesn't get it. He's immature. That's what Triple H said. Triple H was answering questions about the Velveteen Dream earlier. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he was talking about the whole Velveteen Dream situation. And he said, on a personal level, he can be very immature. And I just thought to myself, that's a funny word to use. That's a very polite word to use for some of the things that Velveteen Dream was accused of. But I guess they found no illegal wrongdoing, right? So there's no story. It's a non-story. Except for the fact that this came across like a punishment. You know what? Sending this guy to Monday Night Raw, that would be a punishment. I have a feeling he's on his way to Raw or SmackDown. If he's going to Raw, that's punishment enough. So then we got an ad. This maybe was my favorite moment of the whole night. We got a commercial. We got an advertisement. For the return of Halloween Havoc. Yes, see all the little pumpkins on the screen? Halloween Havoc. Halloween Havoc is coming back. You know how many years that me and probably every other fucking podcaster has been begging for Halloween Havoc to come back? Please bring back Halloween Havoc. Why is Halloween Havoc not a pay-per-view? Why is Halloween Havoc not a TV special? Let everybody get dressed up, play off the Halloween theme. Now, they filed for the trademark 2 years ago. I don't know what the issue was before that. Maybe they tried to get it and they couldn't. But they filed for the trademark 2 years ago. They must have gotten it because now it's coming back. It's coming back as a special episode of NXT on Wednesday, September 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern, opposite AEW Dynamite. So it took all this time and now they're going to use it to try to pop a rating against AEW. You know what? It might work. I might have to consider doing an NXT review that night instead of AEW. I probably won't, but NXT just doesn't do the kind of numbers. The truth. NXT does not, on YouTube anyway, NXT does not do the kind of numbers that AEW does. But I'm definitely looking forward. It's going to be hosted by Shotzi Blackheart. She is going to be the host, whatever that means. And it's about damn time. It's about damn time. Is all I have to say about that. Took him 20 years. You know, I got to say about Triple H. Triple H is an old school guy. This Capital Wrestling throwback, right, that we now see. Triple H pushed to bring back War Games. Vince McMahon didn't want War Games. Triple H brought back War Games. Now Triple H is bringing back Halloween Havoc. Now there's only one thing left to do. There's only one thing left to do. Bring back the inflatable pumpkin. It would not be Halloween Havoc without the pumpkin. I want the inflatable pumpkin. Bring back the pumpkin. That's all I ask. And then it will truly be Halloween Havoc. So I'm very excited about that. We had Santos Escobar. Santos Escobar defending his NXT Cruiserweight Championship against Isaiah Swerve Scott. This was basically Lucha Underground Killshot against King Cuerno. This was like a Lucha Underground match these two would have had 4 or 5 years ago. This was the best either guy has looked in their entire NXT run so far. Probably the best match of either guy's career so far. I thought this was an excellent match. It was all action right from the very beginning. Swerve was just flying all over the place. He hit a moonsault off the apron. He hit a corkscrew senton or phoenix, like a phoenix dive or whatever, phoenix splash out to the floor. Hit a Fosbury flop onto Escobar near the entrance. Wade Barrett on commentary. Wade Barrett was adamant that Swerve was making a very big mistake. He was very adamant about this. He said that Swerve has beaten Escobar. He's got a win over Escobar before. Why is he deviating from the strategy that worked for him last time? Why is he showboating? Why is he flying all over the place? Wade Barrett takes this analyst role on this show very seriously. Wade Barrett is very good. He's very good in this role, in case you haven't figured it out by now. So Escobar was working on Scott. He was wearing him down. Scott turned the tie, threw some punches. Rolling Thunder, pay dirt for a near fall. And he spiked Escobar with a DDT for a two count. Out came Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza. And here we thought that Escobar was going to fight on his own. But in fact, here come his goons, the goon squad, on their way down to the ring. And they're distracting the referee. They're distracting Isaiah. So Escobar hits Scott with a shoulder breaker for a near fall. All of a sudden, out to even the odds is Ashanti the Adonis. Now, some of you might be wondering, who the fuck is Ashanti the Adonis? Well, he is the former Tahuti Miles, which I know it sounds like something you would say if I just sneezed. You would say something like, oh, Tahuti Miles. But no, that's not his name anymore. Tahuti Miles is dead. He is now Ashanti the Adonis, which actually is a much better name. And he seems like a very charismatic guy. I haven't seen too much of his work. I'd like to see more of him. He seems like he could be the next breakout star in this NXT brand. He cut a promo later on. You know, he's got a lot of charisma. So let's get him on TV more often and let's see what he can do. Let's see what he can bring to the table here. But anyway, he chased off the members of Legado del Fantasma. So Escobar hit the Phantom Driver. This was a great near fall. I thought the match was over here. That's his finish. Swerve kicked out. Escobar goes for the Three Amigos. He goes for the Eddie Guerrero frog splash, but he misses. Does not connect with the frog splash. House call by Swerve. Hits a 450. Escobar kicks out. I hate seeing the 450 used, not as the finish, but such is the state of wrestling. There's a lot of moves I wish were not used for near falls and setup moves, but unfortunately that's the way it is. So they fall through the ropes, they end up on the apron, and Swerve gets knocked backwards. Now this didn't look good. I know what they were going for here, but you gotta be safe about it. I mean, the whole point was the back of his head or the top of his head was supposed to clip. We were supposed to believe that it clipped the ring post. I don't want the guy's fucking head to actually smack the ring post. But you could tell that his head didn't really... at best, it grazed the ring post. But he sold it like he was knocked loopy. And unfortunately, that was the finish. That led to the finish where Escobar hit this double underhook facebuster onto his knee for the win. This could have gone either way. You could have gone either way here. You could have had Escobar retain as they did. I don't think anybody would have complained if Swerve won. This was the best match of Swerve's career so far in NXT. He looked great. He is great. But he looked fantastic out there. But I picked Escobar to win, and I'm glad he did, because I think, you know, his run is not over yet. The Cruiserweight title feels more important now than it would have 6 months ago. I like this little run that he's on. But this could have gone either way. And as I said before, this was the best match of either guy's career so far on the NXT brand, bar none. Bar none. I do see all of your super chats, and I'm going to get to all of them. And if you have questions, feel free to submit them also in super chat form. We're going to get to those a little bit later. I do appreciate all the support from you guys. If you guys do send in super chats, if you want to take a look at those special amounts, they're in the description down below, but it could be anything you want. It could be anything you want. We'll go through them. Every single one of them. We'll go through that in just a little bit. But now we're up to the NXT Women's Championship match. It is the NXT Women's title on the line, Io Shirai. Io Shirai defending her championship against Candice LeRae. The dream was already dead, unfortunately. The dream of her and Johnny leaving together as champions in the same night. That dream came to an end at the very beginning of the show. These two had a match. It's not the first takeover match between these two women. These two had a match, as I look at Creepy Jeff Hardy, the perfect Halloween super chat. Creepy Jeff Hardy. That's from the Impact days. These two had a match last year, last summer at TakeOver Toronto. Not for a championship, it was on the undercard. It was Io Shirai, who I think was still a heel at the time, taking on Candice LeRae. That was a fantastic match. Io won that match as well, but that was a fantastic match. So these two came into this match. We already knew that they could work well together because we've seen them work well together. We've seen them work well together at a takeover show. So we knew exactly what these two women were capable of. And they went out here and they had a very good match. Had a very good match. We were, what was it? Was it the fourth match already? Fourth or fifth? Well, if it was the fourth, we were 4-for-4 after this match. Can't say a bad thing about any of the matches on this show. Candice was slowing the pace midway through. She was working some submissions. She was stomping on Io. So Io comes back. Candice missed a senton. And Io comes back. Hits her with a double stomp. Candice goes for the lion salt. I gotta say, Candice LeRae has a fantastic lion salt. Or a quebrada, whatever you want to call it. She's great. When I see her hit that, I've always said that, when I see her hit that move, she just sort of like glides through the air. It's very smooth. Reminds me of a Kurt Angle moonsault. Just, I don't know. She always hits that move. It's picture perfect. Unfortunately, she didn't win with it, but she did. She got a near fall out of it. So Io locks on a crossface. Candice transitions into the Gargano escape. And Io gets to the bottom rope. When Candice releases the hold, though, she lets go, and she inadvertently strikes the referee. Punches the referee right in the face. Referee goes down. So now Io hits an air raid crash, goes for her moonsault, eats the knees from Candice on the way down, and on her way down, so as she's coming down with the moonsault, and she eats the knees, when she pops up, she too bumps the referee by accident. Referee goes down, he falls out of the ring. And Candice hits the Wicked Stepsister footstop. There's no referee. She's got the match won, but there's no referee to count. So who comes out but Johnny Gargano? And Johnny Gargano comes out. He's got a referee shirt that he puts on. And he goes to count the fall. Io kicks out. So Johnny goes and grabs the women's title outside the ring. He's going to end this. He's going to finish this off right now. He grabs the championship, but the referee is up, and the referee catches him. And the referee is yelling at him. The referee is admonishing this guy, give me my shirt. And I'm thinking, you've got your shirt. Maybe this was his other shirt, but you've already got a shirt. Who cares? Just send the guy to the back. This referee was obsessed. Give me my shirt. So while he's distracted with all of this stuff, meanwhile, there's a match going on. He seemed very concerned about his shirt. So while this is going on, Candice hits Io with the belt. Of course, the referee didn't see it because he's obsessed over his fucking shirt. She goes for the pin. Io kicks out. Top rope Spanish fly by Io Shirai connects. And it's back up for the moonsault. And Io retains the women's championship. Very good match. These two women work very well together. That's two very good or even excellent matches at TakeOver shows. Last year and this year. 4-for-4. And another loss. 2-in-1 night for the Gargano family. This was not a good night for the Garganos. Not a good night for them. And it makes me wonder, could they be headed to Raw? Could they be headed to SmackDown? We got a draft coming up. The WWE has not confirmed that NXT is going to be part of the draft. But earlier today, I don't know if you saw it, but WWE, their Twitter account, they tweeted everybody, you know, wanting all the fans to tweet their draft moves. Who do you think is going to Raw? Who do you think is going to SmackDown? And they included NXT. Now, maybe it was an intern who made a mistake, but they quickly deleted it. I don't know if that's a sign that, in fact, NXT is going to be part of the draft. I don't see why NXT shouldn't be part of the draft. All we ever hear about from these people are NXT is now a third brand. It's not developmental. It's its own brand. NXT is on USA now. It's on the same network as Monday Night Raw. Well, then why does it get treated like the bastard stepchild? Why wouldn't it be included in the draft? Doesn't make any fucking sense. If it's its own brand, I mean, people are coming up from NXT throughout the year. Makes absolutely no sense for it not to be part of the draft. NXT should absolutely be part of the draft. Although I do pity some of the people who go to Raw. Some people can overcome that. Other people, unfortunately, can't. That's their battle to fight. So I don't know why the tweet was deleted. I don't know if NXT is going to be part of the draft officially or not. But again, there's absolutely no reason for them not to be. It's just stupid. If they leave them out, it's just very dumb. Io's in the ring. Io is in the ring and she's celebrating her win. And all of a sudden, who pops up on the screen? Toni Storm. I had completely forgotten about Toni Storm. She's been overseas, I guess unable until now to travel here. Hanging out with Juice Robinson, right? The two of them are an item. For those who don't know, there's your soap opera update. But they seem very happy together. Good for Juice. Juice seems like a very happy guy. He's very happy in New Japan. Last I heard, anyway, he and Toni Storm were together. What's not to love if you're Juice Robinson? So good for him. But she pops up on the screen and she says that she is officially back. She is officially back in NXT. She says, sends a warning to Io, very soon it will be Toni time. So that's a big addition to that women's roster, but we're not done yet. Io's still in the ring. Now we have a vignette. And we've seen these vignettes that have been airing over the last several weeks of this mystery person who is coming back to NXT. And they were kind of billing themselves as a former NXT champion. We don't know what that means. And I've been saying on the podcast, that doesn't mean that it's a men's champion. It could be a former women's champion. And the two choices that I threw out were either Bo Dallas. Everybody was saying Bo Dallas. I figured it was either Bo Dallas, who is still under contract, or Ember Moon. Ember Moon, a few months ago, was on TV on the WWE Backstage show on Fox. Tears in her eyes, talking to Booker T and Renee Young and everybody. Worried that her injury, her Achilles injury, was so bad, she wasn't sure if she would ever be able to come back. Now, I don't know if that was just her putting on. Did she know 5 months ago that she was going to end up in NXT? Probably not. At that time, maybe her rehab was going slow enough where she really didn't know if she would be able to come back or not. So for her sake, I hope she's 100% because, again, that's a very serious injury. It's a tough injury to come back from. It is a serious injury. Achilles injuries are just, they're tough. And not everybody is the same, you know, when they recover from that. But she looked great here. Big smile on her face. She came out. She took the motorcycle helmet off, and it was Ember Moon. She has a little bit of a different haircut. Otherwise, though, she looked the same. Big smile on her face. So things just went from 50 to 100 as far as this women's division is concerned in NXT. Because all of a sudden now, you've got Io Shirai, who is the champion, the right person for that role. For the time being, Rhea Ripley is still there. I have a feeling she's not going to be there very long. But Rhea Ripley is still there. But now you've got Toni Storm back, and you've got Ember Moon back. Ember Moon is back in NXT. And they needed that boost. They needed that shot in the arm because you have Tegan Nox, who just went down with another ACL tear. There's no telling when she's going to be back. They lost Mia Yim, and they lost Mercedes Martinez to Monday Night Raw. So they lost a few people recently. So all of a sudden, in one night, they got two big names back. Candice may be on the way out, so they need new faces, and these are the first two, and I think it's going to be a real shot in the arm. Rhea, I think, ought to be headed to Raw or SmackDown, preferably SmackDown. But I think Rhea and Candice, to me, are the two most likely ones to move, I think. Rhea earlier today was saying that she wanted to face the winner of the match tonight with Candice and Io. I don't think they're waiting until the next TakeOver in December. We could see that match as soon as this Wednesday. If we get that match in the next week or two, it's because Rhea is moving. They could really use her. The women's division on Raw or SmackDown could use a few new faces. Now, you could repackage Carmella all you want to. Carmella's been around for years. Everybody knows she's a known commodity. You could repackage her 15,000 times. It's not going to make a difference. You need to bring in new faces. And Rhea Ripley is one of those people who ought to get the call up to one of those brands. Which brings us to the main event. Finn Balor. Finn Balor challenging Kyle O'Reilly. It's actually Kyle O'Reilly, the one challenging for the NXT Championship. The biggest match of Kyle O'Reilly's life. Kyle O'Reilly, ever since he came to NXT, has been a tag team wrestler. It's been him and Bobby Fish. Call them Red Dragon. Call them Undisputed Era. Call them whatever you want. That's all that Kyle O'Reilly has been. But Kyle O'Reilly has the potential, I've said, to be somebody who one day could be on SmackDown, let's say, as a solid intercontinental champion. I don't know that I ever see him as Universal Champion or WWE Champion. The talent is there. I don't ever see him necessarily being, you know, pushed to that level, but he could be a solid intercontinental level champion on the main shows as a single. I think his future is as a single, not even as a tag team wrestler. So I was very happy to see somebody new in the main event, him getting a shot. I think it's a cool story. You know, on that Prime Target special they did, he talked about how he's always wanted to face Balor, but they always missed each other. So when he left Canada to come to the U.S., Balor had already left for Japan. When he went to Japan, Balor had went to NXT. When he came to NXT, Balor went to Monday Night Raw. And they just kept missing each other. And now they were finally going to get to go one-on-one. This match got off to a very slow start. And yes, Frost, I understand that Kyle O'Reilly is a former ROH champion. That was ROH. This is WWE. Do you really think that Vince McMahon is going to look at Kyle O'Reilly and push him as the world champion on SmackDown or push him as the world champion on Raw? Because I don't. I mean, I know they did with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, though, is like he's a special performer. I put him in a different category. You know, he could be a very versatile performer. I mean, I guess so can Kyle. Kyle could be the funny guy, too. But I don't know. I just don't. It's not that he doesn't have the ability to be at that level. It's just a matter of I don't see him being pushed at that level. Once he leaves Triple H and he goes to Vince, I just don't see it. But there's nothing wrong. with being in the kind of upper mid-card, you know, intercontinental level. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. They got off to a slow start. They were working holds. This was a very kind of old school type wrestling match. I could see where some people would watch this and get kind of bored. Why they're slowing the pace down. Why? The problem is almost every other match on this show was like a million miles an hour. And so they intentionally brought the speed down. They brought the temperature down a lot here. They cooled everybody down. I think that's what they were going for. And yeah, it was a little, at first it was a little dull if you're not into the exchange of holds and all that, but it was building to something. What they built to was, I thought, an excellent main event. This was a great professional wrestling match. They knew they were going to go a while. They slowed it down. They were working holds. I said before, O'Reilly took this great corner Bret Hart chest first bump into the corner. Balor caught O'Reilly with a liver shot, and he just crumbled into a heap. And that really played into the story of the rest of the match. They were playing up that liver shot. He made his liver quiver here in this match, and the announcers just kept mentioning it over and over again. They kept coming back to that liver shot. He finally started mounting a comeback, did O'Reilly. He hit a regal plex at one point with a bridge, folded up Balor for a near fall. Balor hit the sling blade. He was setting up for the drop kick out of the corner, the shotgun drop kick. And O'Reilly drop kicked Balor right in the knee. So now Balor is nursing a knee injury. And that's also part of the story they were telling. Balor, even at the very end of the match, when he was trying to climb up, Balor was selling the knee. It was all about working holds, working body parts, and selling it. Not selling a body part and then 2 minutes later you forget about it. They were working it, you know, they were working it like a straight wrestling match. There was no interference. Nobody got involved. Undisputed Era did not get involved. Tommaso Ciampa did not get involved. Ciampa still got some unfinished business with Kyle O'Reilly from a few weeks ago. I thought maybe he would show up. No Tommaso Ciampa. So there was no bullshit during this match. Balor locked him in an abdominal stretch. O'Reilly's mouth was bloody. He gets out of the hold. He tries to lock in a heel hook on Balor. Balor, though, turns it into a sharpshooter. You talk about a heel move. You're going to put a sharpshooter on a Canadian. If this were in front of a Canadian crowd, they would have run Balor out of there on a rail. You don't put a Canadian in a sharpshooter. But that's what Balor did here. So Kyle mounted another comeback. He got caught with a Pele kick. Roared back with a lariat. Both guys are down. O'Reilly hits a brainbuster. Balor kicks out. Kyle transitions into an armbar. A lot of armbars on this show. Balor with the 1916. O'Reilly kicks out. Balor heads up top, and Kyle catches him. So Balor he's on top, and Kyle drags him across the top rope. Talk about rope burn. And he drag and screws him twice over the rope. Again, working the knee. The knee that he drop kicked earlier in the match. He's still working that knee. O'Reilly off the top rope with a knee drop to the back of Balor's knee. And he locks on the heel hook. Balor makes it to the ropes. German suplex by O'Reilly. Balor pops right back up, hits the double stomp. So Balor is in agony. He is dragging himself to the top rope. Pulls himself up, and he hits the coup de grace to put O'Reilly away. And that shocked me. I'm so used to everybody kicking out of everybody's finishing move. It felt like we had like 3 or 4 more minutes left in this match. But, in fact, he hit his finish and he got the pin the way it should be. When you hit your fucking finish, you go home. And he did. Hit the coup de grace, got the 1-2-3. Balor was also bleeding from the mouth. His jaw looked jacked. His jaw looked fucked. I don't know if he has a legitimate jaw injury or what. It didn't look good. I'd be very curious to get the injury report when we're done here. But he was bleeding from the mouth. And he helps O'Reilly up to his feet. They were adhering to the code of honor. All of a sudden, as they're in the ring and they're standing up and they're kind of posing, the camera turns on the hard camera side, and it shows Ridge Holland. And Ridge Holland has Adam Cole on his shoulder. He's carrying him around like a little baby. And he dumps Adam Cole on the floor, and he walks away. And the other members of Undisputed Era come out. They're all panicked. What happened? Did you see anything? Balor's like, no, I was just... Balor's probably thinking I just wrestled a fucking match. What the hell did I see? What are you asking me? What did I see something? I just wrestled a 20-minute match. I got blood coming out of my mouth. And that's how they went off the air. Adam Cole is on the ground. He's in distress. He's been beaten up by Ridge Holland. Another new face. Another relatively new face. He has not been on the NXT brand very long. He came over from NXT UK. I have been singing this guy's praises a little bit for the last month. When he first popped up on NXT, heading into TakeOver 30, I said there's certain mannerisms and things about this guy that remind me of a young Brock Lesnar. He's not exactly like a young Brock, but there are just things about him. Besides the raw power, he's a powerful guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he reminds me of a young Brock Lesnar. And I see a potential, I see star potential in this guy. And clearly Triple H does as well. Because the NXT UK brand just started up doing shows again. It would be very easy for them to say, hey, Ridge, we're shipping you on back to NXT UK. But he's not on NXT UK. The fact that he's on the main NXT brand here in the States, I think speaks a lot to the potential that they see in this guy. And now it looks like he's getting a big push because he was in the final shot of TakeOver. He laid out the former NXT champion. So they're going with Ridge Holland. And I wonder if that's at the expense of Dexter Lumis. Poor Dexter Lumis, he got hurt at the wrong time. Dexter Lumis was the one. He was the new guy who was getting the big push. He was the new guy that was feuding with Undisputed Era. And then he got hurt. He got hurt on a stupid dive that he shouldn't have been doing. And he missed his shot at NXT TakeOver 30. They pulled him from the ladder match. Only this week did he pop up on TV again. I wonder if Ridge Holland is getting sort of a push at the expense of Dexter Lumis. But that's what happens sometimes. You get hurt, you got to go away, and that's it. It's on to the next guy. I don't know if that's what's going on here, but I'm all for you know, giving Ridge Holland something big to do on the show because, again, I think the guy's got a lot of star potential. So I thought that this was an excellent show. You know, it's hard to do these takeover shows and maintain the feel of a traditional takeover show in the absence of being in a crowd, 10,000 people, 12,000, 15,000 people like they're traditionally used to being in front of. And you just have the whole building going nuts and all the chants, this is awesome, chanting NXT, fight forever, all the nonsense that people usually chant. And you really, you know, in this environment, you really do miss out on a lot of that. And I think this whole Thunderdome hybrid that they now have going for them, it's only one night, but I think it's a pretty cool atmosphere that they've created for themselves. The way they've rebranded the PC. And I like the mix of the virtual fans with some actual people being in the building. So I thought it came across great. I thought it came across, it made NXT feel as big league as it has felt all year long. And they delivered. And it's hard for me to explain why it still feels like there's still this lack of interest in the NXT brand. That I wouldn't have said was there a year ago. And I don't know if it's just the pandemic. I don't know if it's expanding the show to 2 hours. I think that might have been part of it. You know, back when NXT was an hour long in front of the Full Sail crowd, it was just a different vibe. And then they went to 2 hours and they went to USA and it was different. It wasn't the same. And then you take the crowds away. And there's been this element missing from NXT. And I see it in the numbers. And when I do cover NXT on YouTube and not on the main show, you could just see it in the numbers. I mean, it's just the way it is. The Twitter polls, the YouTube reviews, the numbers just don't compare to the AEW show. So why? What is NXT missing? In the chat, let me know. Or Super Chat or whatever. What do you think it is that NXT is missing? Because this was overall an excellent show tonight. But the brand still, it doesn't feel like a dead brand, but it just feels like there's no excitement there. There's no spark there. Maybe that'll change in this Capitol Wrestling Center. Maybe now going forward, it'll be a different vibe. Maybe Halloween Havoc will usher in this wonderful new era of NXT. Maybe getting actual people in the building, actual fans in the building, even if it's just friends and family. Maybe that'll make a difference. but there's just been something missing from these NXT shows. We'll see now coming out of this show if they can recapture some of that. Because now they've set up some new stories going forward. They got some people back. Maybe it's exactly the refresh that they need. 85% thumbs up so far in the takeover poll on Twitter. 15% thumbs down. So an excellent score. I would love to know who these 15% are. I don't see how you could thumb this show down, but I guess that's the beauty of the internet. Everybody has their own opinion. That's what the comment section on Twitter is for. So anyway, go vote at Solomonster. If you have not already done so, let me know what you thought of the show tonight. I would love to know your thoughts on TakeOver. Oh, before I get to the your questions, I dropped a brand new 2.5 hour podcast earlier today, episode 672 of the Sound Off. You're going to see some clips from the show going up throughout the week or in the next couple of days on YouTube, but not the whole show. If you want the full shows and everything I talk about on the shows, you got to download or stream it from those platforms that you see on the bottom of your screen right there. There's so many different ways to access the full Sound Off episodes. It's insane. We're always being added to a new platform. We're on all the major ones. iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Google Podcasts. We're everywhere. Amazon Music, we're everywhere. But if you missed it, when you're done here, check that one out. Talk about WrestleMania. Reportedly moving next year from LA to Tampa. Tampa going to get the make good on the Mania they missed this year. So we talk about that. Talk about WWE's latest edict. Talent is very upset. They're said to be fuming, furious over this whole Cameo Twitch situation. I'll explain why and what I think about that. Big management shakeup in New Japan. What effect that might have on a potential future working relationship between New Japan and AEW. It sounds promising. So I talked about that as well. And just a ton of shit. So check out episode 672 if you did not have a chance to earlier. Look at these pumpkins. Get out of the way. These damn pumpkins. Ryan Spies with the $1.99 super chat. No Bo Dallas on the show. He's very upset. No Bo Dallas. Yeah, I mean, Bo Dallas, I don't know what's going on with him. I think he pulled himself from TV in December. I don't think he's been seen since. Don't know what's up with Bo. They let go of Curtis Axel, but they kept Bo. Maybe they just didn't want to piss off Bray Wyatt because they already let go of his father. You know, they didn't want to let go of his father and his brother. And really make him upset. I don't know. But he's still under contract. He's just not doing anything. I miss the old Bo Dallas. That Bo Dallas run, Bo Leave from NXT. I wish we could get that version of Bo Dallas back. Always found him very entertaining. Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $10. Caught in my zipper. Oh, I hate when that happens. Kaylee Ray will beat Asuka's number of days as champion while sitting at home. Well, but she's not holding the same title, though. So she might beat her number of days, but it's not the same championship. Crash with the $10. Would you rather have WWE do a brand split that they stick to or just have wrestlers go on either show? Also, the first brand split was taken more seriously. Well, that honestly, that's always been my issue with it. My issue is the fact that they just don't know how to do a fucking brand split. Yeah, there are potentially fun ways to do it. Trades, you know, back when they had general managers. We never saw trades. They would be like every now and then, but they never took full advantage of the whole format and made it kind of feel real or feel special. People just sort of come and go. Hey, we want to have this guy on the show this week. All right, we'll just put him on the show this week. There's never any real organization to it. I would be in favor of having what I would call an unofficial brand split, where the rosters are pretty much exclusive, but you can mix people as you see fit. That way you're not bound to dumb rules that you're just going to ignore anyway. Because they just don't know how to do it. They don't know how to do a proper brand split. Spencer Dunnings picked up my Sound Off 13 shirt earlier today. Well, that's awesome. We did have a whole bunch of people already pick up the shirt. There it is, by the way, on Pro Wrestling Tees. I want a whole bunch of people to pick up this shirt. We got a month until the 13-year anniversary. I want everybody to get their shirts early And if you live out of the country, it could take up to 30 days to ship. So I would not wait to get in on this and pick up that t-shirt. But thank you to Spencer. Brian Hill with the $10. A Bret Hart birthday wish. I would have pooped my pants. Love the podcast today. And loving the review. Keep it up. And that new shirt is a killer. I see what you did there. I see what you did there. Chris Pantaleo, just purchased your new shirt now. Thanks for all that you do. Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Darius Smith, do we have a lot of Friday the 13th fans in the chat? We have to, right? We have a lot of Jason Voorhees fans in the chat. See, I almost feel it's like I'm doing a great injustice because I don't know if you could see it, but right now I am wearing the Michael Myers shirt because it is Halloween. So I don't have a Jason shirt. I only have a Michael shirt. But you're probably gonna be seeing this shirt a lot all month because it is Halloween after all. Darius Smith with the $5. I'm interested in that logo on your t-shirt now. Is that you? That is me. The half face, that is me. Yes, that is from an illustration of me that was done by a fan of the show a number of years, which is why it works so well. That's Jason. That's me. But yes, that was an illustration that was done a number of years ago. Chris Quellman with the $10. Good job for not losing your shit during the Bret Hart birthday wish. By the way, I love seeing the Lucha Underground match of the night. King Cuerno against Killshot. Great pay-per-view. See, I wasn't the only one who felt that way. This was a Lucha Underground-esque match. Haven't seen a match that good with Killshot probably since he was in Lucha Underground. He's had a lot of really good matches, but this one was on another level from the work that we've seen with him so far in NXT. Dop with the $5. Hey, Solid Monster, really enjoyed tonight's show. Do you think Damian Priest needs a new finisher like the Razor's Edge or a Powerbomb? I think the Reckoning is fine. I don't think you need to borrow somebody else's move. He uses the Razor's Edge almost as just like a mid-match move, which, you know, is fine. He's a big guy, so he's not going to do a leaping move off the top or anything like that. I think the Reckoning is fine. The Reckoning is the kind of move that you can hit on anybody. You can hit the Reckoning on anybody at any time. It's an easy move to use. It doesn't put any stress on his body. It doesn't put any stress on his knees. I'm sure if you could go back and tell Hulk Hogan, would you use the leg drop for your career? He'd say, fuck no, brother. Guy's had 10 back surgeries. If Hogan could have used the axe bomber that he used in Japan, here in the States, physically, he'd be in a lot better shape than he is today. What's going on, Tibbs? I hope all is well with you as well. Thank you for the 20 spot. That's Tibbs 316. KC to most with the $10. Was listening to Cornette's podcast talking about why Piper was never WWE champion. And his co-host stated that Hogan, let me see here. His co-host stated that, Brian Last stated that Hogan said in an interview that he did not trust Hogan to return the favor. Did you hear that? I did not hear that. And it's possible. Piper was an interesting one, right? You think about the stories you hear about Hogan. Piper rarely jobbed. I don't know how he got away with it, even against Hogan. I don't think Hogan ever pinned Roddy Piper during that initial program that they had together in WWF. And Hogan was the guy. Hogan was pinning everybody. But I can't remember, certainly not like a televised match, where he actually just flat out pinned Roddy Piper. I don't know how Piper got away with it. That's why him losing and being pinned to Bret Hart at WrestleMania 8 is such a big deal. You didn't see that. You never really saw Roddy Piper lose and get pinned in the middle of the ring like that. So here's Bret Hart, a guy who is on the ascent. And that was a very big deal for him to do that. I mean, you talk about doing the honors for somebody. That's how you know Piper really thought a lot about Bret. The fact that he would let, and at WrestleMania, no less, he let him pin his shoulders down 1, 2, 3. The reality is, the reason that Hogan was the champion and Piper wasn't is because Hogan was the golden goose. It wasn't Piper's time. Hogan was the guy. So it just, at the time, it just didn't make any sense to put the belt on anybody else. I mean, you could have had Hogan chase for it, I guess, but Hogan was the man. And so he had that tie, a stranglehold on that belt for 4 years. 4 years, 4.5 years. It was four years. So I just think, timing-wise, why would you? Piper didn't need it. Piper didn't need the belt. Undertaker never really needed it. Jake Roberts. There's some guys that really didn't need to be the champion. I would put Piper in that category. Jesse Moctezuma. Happy 24/7 title. BS did not end Ember Moon's career. Yeah, that would have been a really shitty way for her career to come to an end. For those who don't know, that's what happened with Ember Moon. That's how she ruptured her Achilles or tore it or whatever the diagnosis was. They called her up and said, hey, we need you tonight for a 24/7 title chase. You're going to chase R-Truth and all these idiots around the building. She was running so fast that when she came through the curtain, she didn't realize that R-Truth was right there. And she had to put the brakes on. Boom. Ruptured her Achilles. On a stupid 24/7 title run. A lap around the building. You talk about a shit way for your career to come to an end. So I'll bet you that Ember Moon is happy as anybody that she is able to come back. Crash, what about Kyle O'Reilly winning Money in the Bank and cashing in? Well, look, I mean, I don't know. Maybe one day anybody could win Money in the Bank, so sure, why not? Why not? It's too early to talk about Kyle O'Reilly and Money in the Bank. Rodimus Prime with the $25 super chat. Awesome takeover show tonight. The main event was amazing. And Jesse again with the $5. Happy that when Johnny came to the ring with the referee shirt, they did not do what they did with Asuka versus Sasha and Bayley. Sean D. Remember when Daniel Bryan started rapping against Kane? That was funny. Yes, that was actually quite funny. Or when Daniel Bryan was on that, what was that show they had for a while? It was the Saturday morning, Saturday morning slam. And he was on commentary talking about bears. It's like some kind of inside joke. He wouldn't shut up about bears. He just gave him a bear hug. He was going on and on about bears. And I vaguely remember Hornswoggle being dressed up in a bear costume and getting kicked in the nuts or something. Maybe I just dreamt it. I don't know. Chris Ludek, sorry if this was asked already, but will we get the Yeti and a monster truck match with someone falling off the roof at Halloween Havoc? I just hope we don't get, well, I guess we're not going to get Hogan and the Warrior. We don't have to worry about that. I don't want to see a rematch of the rematch at Halloween Havoc. One of the worst matches in WCW, probably one of the worst matches in Halloween Havoc history. Not the worst, but one of the worst. Chris, I love Friday the 13th and Halloween, but Raw is the scariest of all. Brian Becerra, NXT is developmental, and guys move on to Raw or SmackDown, and nobody stays on NXT. It has never been treated like a quote-unquote brand all of its own. As long as it continues this way, it will never change. Well, you have a guy like Ciampa who has said that he does not want to go to the main roster, and I know he made a few appearances on SmackDown, but he and Gargano so far have been lifers in NXT. I do think we may be seeing Gargano and Candice, though, moving on somewhere else. I just don't know what's left for them to do, what's left for them to accomplish at this point. I mean, really, what is left for them to accomplish in NXT at this rate? They've done everything they could do, especially Johnny. He's been there for so long. He did the tag team thing, DIY, North American champion, NXT champion. He's wrestled everybody there is to wrestle. The guy's lost 3 takeover matches in a row. I mean, at some point, you got to wonder if it's time to move on. It's time to move on. I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith that if he went to Raw, they would do much with him. But maybe, who knows? Every now and then, yeah, you get lucky. I just look at what Keith Lee's doing so far. Keith Lee feels as, and Keith Lee got a win over Randy Orton at Payback. Keith Lee has yet to be beaten just straight up. And yet Keith Lee feels less special right now than he has probably ever since he signed with WWE. And that has to be a concern. That has to be a worry. I think for anybody on that NXT roster who gets called up to Raw, that has to be a concern. Just look at Keith Lee and that shitty music they gave him. The True Heel Master. I watched your review about WWE taking over talent's Twitch and Cameo accounts earlier. I have no sympathy for the WWE talent. They should speak up. Ball's in their court. If it bothers them that much, if what they're saying is true, and we're not and they're not misrepresenting what Vince McMahon is actually looking for, and I'm hoping that this week we'll get some clarification on that. But enough people have now spoken about it where it sounds pretty on point. At the end of the day, somebody's got to take a stand and put their name on it publicly and stand up. And not just one person, but a whole bunch of people. And if they're not willing to do it, it doesn't matter how many times someone like me is going to sit here and turn blue in the face talking about this stuff. I'm not the one that has to work there. They are. If it bothers them that much, if they value their channel, if they value their freedom, I can't imagine giving mine up to somebody like that. Give me your channel. I'll cut you in on some of the profits. Give me your channel. There's my message to you. That would be my message. I guess it's harder if you're getting a paycheck from that company, but they have to make that decision. What's more important? Is it the money or is it the freedom? Pedro, from what I've seen of Candace before NXT, they have missed the mark with her. She should not have won today, but there has to be better for her. And perhaps there will be. If she moves on, they could use some new women on the main roster. Perhaps there will be. And AWOL with the $10. NXT for me feels like feels like good wrestling, but not much else. Everyone has become Superman at takeovers. Well, yeah, that is true. So near falls and finishes feel like they have no meaning. That is what I feel has been missing anyway. So that is from AWOL. And HBKC83 with the $5 disappointed Solomon Monster. Seeing Johnny putting on the referee shirt gave me flashbacks of Jimmy Hart at WrestleMania 9. Well, actually, one of the funnier moments was, if you remember that episode of Raw from early 2000, and it was the night that The Rock qualified to get into the Fatal 4-Way, or to make it a Fatal 4-Way at WrestleMania, and he beat The Big Show, and Shane McMahon was the referee. Vince McMahon had not been on TV in many months. And the limo pulls into the parking garage, and who gets out? It's Vince McMahon. And everybody loses their minds. And Vince McMahon is walking through the backstage area, and Triple H confronts him, and Vince punches him and knocks him out. And he comes out, and he wallops his son. And then he picks up a chair, and he whacks Shane in the head with the steel chair. And he takes off Shane's referee shirt, and he puts it on himself. Vince McMahon wearing a referee shirt is just always a funny thing to me. When he was the referee for Austin against Dude Love at Over the Edge in 98, I mean, he intentionally had to wear a referee shirt that was about three sizes too small. Just to make it. Now, Vince was in good shape. Vince was, he had the swelled up physique. I'm sure he ate a lot of salads at that time. But it was comical. He looked like he bummed. I mean, Mick Foley even said it looked like he bummed the shirt off like a 13-year-old girl. So, didn't he do that with CM Punk too? There was something with a match that he officiated on Raw, like maybe 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. I don't even know. So anyway, I think we are caught up right now on the Super Chat. So again, if you want to get any final ones in, now is the time to do it. I do appreciate all the support. You guys are awesome every single week. And remember, I'm going to be right back here again with you live this Wednesday. That's the day after my birthday. I'll be streaming with you on Wednesday night. It's the 30-year anniversary of Chris Jericho, who debuted 30 years ago this month against Lance Storm. I guess it was Lance Storm's debut, too. Poor Lance Storm, he gets overshadowed. Everyone talks about Chris Jericho. Nobody realizes it's the 30-year anniversary of Lance Storm's career. He's had a pretty good career, right? Pretty respectable trainer as well. So that's going to be the, I guess that's the big theme of Dynamite this Wednesday. So we can talk about that on the Wednesday stream. Look at that. Looks like Bret Hart is crapping out a very angry Steve Austin, flipping me off. KC DeMost with the $2 super chat. Balor, NXT champion against Roman Reigns, Universal champion at WrestleMania. It'd be a hell of a match. I remember the match they had on Raw after Balor moved to Raw. Balor beat him clean. And he actually went on to win the Universal title. And unfortunately, he also suffered a devastating injury. And he had to give the belt up the very next night. But that is not going to be the WrestleMania main event. I'm pretty confident in saying right now that that will in fact not be the WrestleMania main event. Sorry, I don't have the... Actually, do I have it? I think I do have it, actually. Yeah, I do have it. The Zinfamous slide where we randomly pick what the WrestleMania main event is. I'll do that in a second here before we end. It's always a lot of fun to do that. Okay, guys. Are we done here? I think I got through all the super chats. Listen, thank you for all of your support. Again, if you did miss episode 672 of The Sound Of, go ahead and give that a listen. 2.5 hours of audio. You got a lot of the Solo Monster this weekend. So go check that podcast out. We got more super chats coming in. I was wondering when I would hear from this guy here, Food Hive. Saw that you were live. Just stopped to show my love for The Sound Off. See you on Wednesday. Food Hive is one of the regulars that we have on the Wednesday stream. So very nice of him to drop in here tonight. We have our merry band of misfits every single week. Before I do leave though, I'll play. I love that Bret Hart video. Again, I gotta thank Eddie for that. That was fucking awesome. So thank you for that. I've met Bret a couple of times over the years. I have an old WWF Spotlight magazine. He was on the cover of Spotlight magazine. I think it was called Spotlight magazine. Probably in '94. He was on the cover as the world champion. Had like a pink background. And when he came to Caroline's on Broadway, he and Ric Flair, for a signing probably 12 years ago, I think it was, I got him to sign that. So that's framed. It's, you know, downstairs. I don't have like a lot of wrestling memorabilia like framed and stuff like that, but that one I have framed. And then another listener, Keith, shout out to Keith. He was at a convention somewhere a few years ago and he said, listen, I got something I want to send you. And I said, okay. And he sent it to me and I opened it up and maybe I could dig it out actually. And I'll just show you real quick. But it was this custom, I guess it's like some kind of special edition Bret Hart King of the Ring 1993 figure of him in his 1993 King of the Ring like attire. And he got Bret to sign the box in a pink Sharpie. And I just thought that was the cool, because King of the Ring 93 is probably... might be my favorite pay-per-view of all time. I love that show. So I actually have some pretty cool Bret memorabilia, actually. So my fans are the best. They know me. They know me better than I know myself. Yeah, we'll play that video again here in just a second. See, actually, let me see if I could find that thing really quick. I have it. It's like right over here. What's going on, Scott? Scott Woodford with the $5. Big E against Roman at WrestleMania. Well, I think it's inevitable we're going to get Big E against Roman. I don't know. I don't see that as being the WrestleMania match unless they're going to pull the trigger on Big E and put the belt on him. You know, Big E is somebody who could be a Universal Champion one day. Is he the one to beat Roman Reigns? If you build him up, he could be. No guarantee Brock Lesnar is going to come back. And you know what? There's a lot of people who might not want to see Brock Lesnar again, even as a babyface. Just because the roles are reversed doesn't mean that everybody wants to see Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns for the 65th time. So if you look at these rosters right now, I mean, who would you like to see? Who do you see as the ideal opponent? If we assume Roman Reigns is still going to be champion at WrestleMania, I don't know how the draft is going to change things, but I mean, Daniel Bryan, I don't know when Daniel Bryan is planning on coming back. There's a story there they could tell. I could see Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns as a WrestleMania match. Could I see Big E in that spot? They would really have to. They've done well so far. Continue to build Big E. Continue to build Big E. Maybe even give him a Royal Rumble win. I wouldn't be opposed to that. They told the story last year with Kofi Kingston. Now maybe it's Big E's time. But he's not there yet. He's only been doing the singles thing for about 2 months. You've got to continue to build him up. KM Truth with the $5. Do you think that up-and-coming wrestlers will bypass WWE to go to AEW in the near future, especially with Vince acting like a borderline dictator? I think we're already seeing it. AEW has snatched up a lot of young talent. WWE supposedly has an interest in Ben Carter. Ben Carter just had some impressive showings in AEW. And I'm sure AEW has their eye on him as well. I don't think they're going to get in a bidding war necessarily over 23-year-old Ben Carter, but you know, I think you're going to see more younger guys going to AEW, and not just because, you know, of this nonsense we're hearing about now with like the Twitch and the Cameo stuff, but you know, money aside, there's a certain freedom that some of these guys might want. They might want the ability to still work independent dates while appearing on AEW television. WWE will never allow that. There are people who can work for AEW and potentially still do dates in Japan if they want to. If that's important to a lot of these younger talents, then AEW is going to be the place to go. WWE wants their people under lock and key. When they have you, they own you. People have to think about that before they sign these contracts. These are potentially long contracts. These are 3-year contracts, 5-year contracts. Do you want to be locked down for that length of time? That's the question they have to ask themselves. So I think we're definitely going to see more younger guys going to AEW when under normal circumstances, WWE would be the only big place for them to go. That's why it's so important to have something like an AEW around. You don't have to be a fan of AEW, but you're a fool if you don't think that AEW being around is not a positive thing for wrestling. You are a fool. If you can't see, if you can't understand why it's important to have a healthy AEW around, then you are a fool. The True Heel Master, have you ever watched the horror movie called Society? I have not. Never heard of it. Never heard of it. I'll tell you one thing, though. There is a show that, I don't know if it still is, but it was on Netflix called Slasher. 3 seasons of it. I had never heard of it before last year. I was told about it. I started watching it. Fucking loved it. Way more violent than I expected it to be. Each season is a different story. And it's called Slasher, so it's not... Yeah, that kind of gives you a sense of what it's about. If you've never seen it, check it out. I highly recommend it. Zane. I say John Cena returns to defeat Roman Reigns and break Ric Flair's record. I don't know. See, I don't know about that. I mean, it's a big match. It is a big match. I don't know that I necessarily have a lot of interest in that. But then again, I forgot. There is always the possibility of the biggest match they could do with Roman Reigns, which is The Rock. I'm just convinced that The Rock is not going to do it. I mean, pandemic aside, I'm sure The Rock would love to do it, but it's not always The Rock's decision to make. With all these movies that he's always filming and stuff, I don't see him having the time to do it. But Rock and Roman would be the biggest match they could do. By far, that would be the biggest match they could do. Food Hive says, Halloween 3 or Jason X? I've seen both. Jason X is the one on the spaceship. Come on. Gotta go with Halloween 3. I know everybody shits on Halloween 3. Oh, there's no Michael Myers. Oh, it's not a real Halloween movie. Halloween 3 is the shit. It's a great movie. Give it a shot. Halloween 3 is awesome. All right, let me just put this up on the screen one more time. Let me just see real quick here if I actually have this Bret Hart thing. Let me see. Hold on a second. I think I have it over here. All right, so I knew I had it. Again, Keith is the a listener of my show for a number of years. And he got me this gift, which is one of the coolest things that anybody's ever gotten me. Oh, here it is. It's the Elite Collection. So it's a Ringside Collectibles exclusive. And it's this right here. See? There's Brett. He's wearing his King of the Ring attire. There you see him. And it's signed by Brett himself. In pink. You can't beat that. It's never coming out of this box. I don't know why it would. I haven't played with action figures in, 25 years. But that's truly one of the coolest things anybody's ever gotten me. So, very cool. Mark Winsley with the $20. Sorry for the late super chat. You don't have to apologize. You never have to apologize. What are you apologizing for? Do you feel that NXT and WWE... Oh, that's my favorite super chat right there. I still want to know it's got to be Vader's kid. Unless he's dropping someone else's kid. I don't know the backstory behind that, but I love that fucking gif. I knew right away that's got to be a super chat. Just drops, like the kid is garbage. He just drops him on the floor. Anyway, Mark says, do you feel that NXT and WWE are using number one contenders matches too much as a booking crutch? There have been 5 or 6 within the last couple of weeks alone with very little build. If you use them, if you overuse them, yes, they can be a crutch. You don't want to lean into them too much. So I would say, yeah, just dial it back a little bit. They don't have a ranking system, though. So that's kind of what they do. You know, they'll have this, they'll build up to these number one contenders matches because there's no system in place. I mean, look, even AEW has a ranking system and they still have number one contenders matches all the time. So I just think that's kind of what they do. They all do that. AEW is not immune to that as well. They use it as a crutch. One thing that I like that they're doing, they're having this tournament. But you also don't want to lean on tournaments too much either. But tournaments are a great way to kill, you know, you can eat up a lot of TV time by doing a tournament over the course of a month. And all of a sudden, you're giving these matches on TV some importance that they wouldn't have if they're just random matches on TV. But you also don't want to have 5 tournaments in 1 year. There's got to be a balance. David Rivera, Triple H, said on the conference call, Finn Balor is getting an x-ray on his jaw. Hopefully, it is not broken, but it looks very bad. Yeah, that, oh boy, that sucks. And I made the comment, I said at the end of the review, I said Balor's jaw looked jacked. I mean, he was bleeding from the mouth, but his jaw looked fucked. And I don't know when it happened. They were hitting each other with hard strikes. So I don't know if it was like a palm strike. I don't know if it was a kick. But they were stiffing the hell out of each other. They were they were throwing bombs in there. So it could have been on anything. I'm sure I'll go back and watch clips of it and I'll figure out where it happened. But if he's got a broken jaw, if he has to have his jaw wired shut or something like that, then here we go again. I mean, it's like, Karrion Kross wins the NXT championship. And that very same night, he gets hurt. And he has to vacate the championship. That's what led to all of this stuff with the Iron Man match and then the match with Balor and Adam Cole. And now here we are in a situation where Finn Balor, if that report is to be believed, could very well be hurt. You hope it's not serious, but could we be back in the same boat where Finn Balor is hurt and now he has to give up the NXT championship? Maybe... If this happened, I mean, there may be a curse on this NXT title. I don't know that I want to hold the NXT title. This thing is like, it's like, keep it away. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. Okay, so I have people telling me it was in need of the mouth in the corner near the end of the match. And Duff's vid says it was a knee 2 minutes before the finish when Finn got his jaw busted. Okay. Well, at least he didn't have to wrestle the entire match like that, but I guess that would explain the blood coming from his mouth. And Smooch has said that, yes, that's Vader's kid. I used to follow his son, and he said that it was him. All right, well, if it's his kid, then that's fine. My father did that to me all the time. You know, he would dump me on my ass all the time. That's what fathers do. That's what fathers do. They have to entertain themselves somehow. Yeah, True Heel Master. This, you know what? That main event was very much like a New Japan main event. That's a good point. That was like the kind of match that you would expect to see in the G1. And unfortunately, the way those guys wrestle, guys, they're going to get hurt. You know, when it comes to the knees and the kicks and the palm strikes, unfortunately, sometimes you get one off that's a little too stiff and people get hurt. And Frost757, Full House or Alf? Again, I watched both of them, so I'm very, very familiar with both of those shows. Got to go with Full House. I know it was very cheesy, some of the episodes, but I think I've seen every episode of Full House, so I have to go with Full House. This is very concerning. Poskino in the chat, Balor's look of concern after the match had me worried. You could tell he knew something was wrong immediately. And that is what worries me when I hear stuff like that, because these guys know their bodies. They know, like, when they get a serious injury, they know. They know right away. It's just a matter of, okay, how long am I going to be out for? So if you're saying that Balor had a look of concern on his face, then that's a reason to be worried. Do you think AEW will ever... This is from EJ. What's going on, EJ? Do you think that AEW will ever run a show at TIAA Bank Field after COVID? Maybe in a few years. It won't sell out, but I think they could draw 20,000 to 30,000. It would make sense if they ever wanted to do a stadium show. That's their stadium. That's their home base. I mean, that would be... And it's in Florida, too, so... Weather-wise, especially like maybe in the cooler months, you wouldn't necessarily have... I mean, you always have to worry about rain in Florida. I would try it. If we ever get back to a point where we can actually, you know, pack in stadiums again. I would think that would make sense. That probably would be the most logical place for them to try it. So, anyway, yeah, we're going to have to get more of an update on Finn Balor. It's not looking good, guys. It is not looking good for Finn Balor, who's been on a hell of a roll and had a lot of potential opponents set up for him in NXT. And if his jaw is broken, they ain't going to let him hold on to that title. It's just not going to... I mean, look, Karrion Kross separated his shoulder. And I didn't... It depends on how severe the separation is, but I didn't think that it would be necessary to take the belt off of him, and they did. So if the guy has a fractured jaw or a broken jaw, then we may have seen the end. We may have seen the end, but let's wait until the diagnosis and see. I'm not going to play doctor here on the show. I'm gonna wish happy thoughts for Finn Balor. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. That sucks. But they had a hell of a main event. Would be kind of funny though. Well, not funny, but if it was an injury where he had to have his mouth like basically wired shut, but within a few weeks or a month, he would be okay. And they kept the belt on him, but he couldn't cut any promos. So he would come out. He couldn't move his mouth. All he could do is just stare at people. Like Sting used to do. When he would come out in WCW, he would never speak. He would just stare. Maybe they could turn it into like a new gimmick. But this stream was great. Thank you, guys. I will see you again on Wednesday night for the AEW Dynamite stream. Celebrate my birthday with all of you, if you'll join me. And episode 672, if you missed it, don't forget, 2.5 hours of audio. It's up right now on the feed. Go check it out. A lot of news, a ton of news to cover this week. And if you haven't already done so, buy the shirt. I'll see you Wednesday night.